Okay, this is Kathleen Holt. This is September 12, 2014. I'm at the Cimarron City Library. It's about 2:40 in the afternoon, and I'm here with Sparky Hefner. Sparky, would you tell me your full name, your date of birth, and then we'll get started.
My full name is M. Sparky Hefner, born August 1st, 1934.
Okay. Do you tell people what the M stands for?
Mister.
Mister, I see, okay. A man of few words there. Sparky, tell me about your service. Did you enlist? Were you drafted? How'd you get into the military?
Well, in 1950, I got out of high school in 1952, and in those days we knew that as soon as we turned 19, we were probably going to be drafted. And it was difficult to find a job. Being 18 years old, and I always had a job, but nothing that I wanted to make a career out of. And at any rate, I got notice that in December of 53 that we were next on the list. So a friend of mine, Earl Tankersley, and I went to the draft board and told him, if you want us now, we're willing to go. So I was inducted on February 16th, 1954, at Hopeville, California, where I grew up. And they bused us to Los Angeles for a warm body physical, and everybody passed and got to Fort Ord in a driving rainstorm about 2 o'clock in the morning, and started basic training at Fort Ord on the 17th of February, and left there through my first 8 weeks of infantry training in the 63rd Infantry Regiment. And we were reassigned then in May of 1954 to transfer to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, to reactivate the 598th Field Artillery Battalion, which was an all-black battalion at the time, and approximately 700 soldiers in my training company went to Fort Sill and reactivated the 598th Field Artillery Battalion.
Wow. What made you pick the Army?
I didn't really care, which I had two brothers in the Marine Corps. One of my older brothers served in the 1st Marine Division from 1939 to 1946, spent 40 months in the South Pacific in combat during World War II. And another brother was in the Marine Corps during the Korean War. He went in 51 and spent time in Korea. And they told me how tough those Marines were, and I didn't know if I was tough enough to be a Marine, so I told them they could put me wherever they wanted me.
Oh, I see.
And they needed more grunts in the Army.
I see. So they picked you out that way. So that's how you got to the Midwest, huh?
Yes, ma'am. Connie and I got married in 53 and had been married just a short time when I got drafted.
Wow.
And she and I got in our 46 Ford in May and reported to Fort Sill on May the 10th of 54. And I was fortunate. I was able to go to some schools in field artillery and guided missile training as a fire direction computer.
Uh-huh.
And learned to repair air-to-ground radios.
Oh.
And that was why in October of 54, I had the opportunity to go to these schools. But to do that, I had to be able to serve 3 years. So I enlisted for 3 years in October of 54. So I actually spent 3.5 years in the Army.
Wow.
And during my time at Fort Sill, of course, there was nothing going on much in the world combat-wise in those days. And I was fortunate enough to be able to participate in a lot of athletics at Fort Sill. Earl Tankersley, this friend of mine that we grew up together, were called out of formation about the middle of May, a few days after we'd gotten to Fort Sill, and they told us to report to Butner Field at 1 o'clock. And, of course, we just did what we were told.
Mm-hmm.
And we got there, and it was a baseball practice. And they had read in our 201 files that Earl and I had played some baseball in high school and some semi-pro baseball, and we were fortunate enough to make the team, and so we played baseball all summer. And
wow.
Then when football season started, they invited us to try out for the Fort Sill football team, and we did, and we were both fortunate enough to make the football team.
Wow.
So we got to do a lot of traveling around the country playing football, and played against some Earl and I and one other fellow named Jackson Brumfield were the only three on the Fort Sill football team that hadn't been to college. And most of them were second lieutenants that had been to ROTC. There was Johnny Matsock had played at Michigan State. Fred Yeagers was at Rookie of the Year in 1951 in the NFL at the 49ers. And I played with Billy Vessels and Buck McPhail and
wow.
Leon Heath, Minnie wow. Mavrides. Played against Johnny Lattner.
Oh, my gosh.
Cotton Davidson. It was a wonderful experience for us.
Wow.
And at the end of our enlistment, Earl and I both were offered a scholarship to play football at Cameron State University.
Wow.
School there at Lawton. So it was a junior college at the time. Uh-huh. And we accepted and decided to stay in the Midwest. And,
wow.
We've been here ever since. Moved to Cimarron in 1964.
Wow. So that was
50 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
On July the 14th.
Isn't that something? Wow. That was such a different experience. Now, when you went in, you were not anticipating that was going to be your career, was it?
Oh, not at all. No, it was certain where we were going. And matter of fact, a couple of weeks before our basic training at Fort Ord was over, they told us all to send our new address to our families, mm-hmm. and it was our name, rank, serial number, APO San Francisco. So we knew where we were going. Mm-hmm. We were going to Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And in that short period of time, they signed the truce and stopped sending troops.
Isn't that amazing?
And I've always felt I would have done whatever that I was told to do, mm-hmm. But I felt like I was fortunate not to have to go into combat.
Yes, yes.
I had a brother
right.
that all that time he spent in the Marine Corps in the South Pacific, he was never the same.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still emotional.
Yes, yes. I think it is. It is. So you were 18. What a formative time of life. But you were already married.
I was 19 when Connie and I got married.
Oh, okay.
Both of us were 19.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty nice that you all went through that together, too.
This friend of mine that I mentioned earlier, Earl Tankersley, mm-hmm. and I started kindergarten together, went all through high school together.
Uh-huh.
Played sports, intramurals, and varsity sports in high school.
Uh-huh.
And Earl was an outstanding baseball player. He signed a pro contract right out of high school.
Wow.
Never made it to the bigs, but he made it into A ball.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, he was the same boat the rest of us were in. When you turned 19, you were going to get drafted.
Yeah.
Unless your daddy was on the school board.
Oh.
Or on the draft board.
The draft board.
But it was, we went through three and a half years. Earl signed up for the same school as I did, and we spent exactly the same amount of time in the same unit in the Army. And then we spent 2 years at Cameron Junior College together before
yeah.
we were ever more than 10 miles apart.
Wow.
We were both 26 or 7 years old.
Wow. Where did he go then?
He's in Amarillo now.
Oh, wow.
He went on and finished his degree at Oklahoma State as an entomologist.
Oh.
And had one of his sons. His youngest son was had a rheumatic fever, I think
oh.
it was, and lost his hearing before he was 2 years old.
Oh, wow.
And Earl and his family moved to Amarillo so he could get the boy in the school for the deaf there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where he stayed. But he had a spraying service. He had his pilot's license. And he went to work for Bell Helicopter.
Oh.
And spent 35 years or so with them.
Wow.
And is still in Amarillo. In fact, I talked to him just a day or two ago.
What was his last name?
Tankersley.
I'll tell you why in a minute.
Tankersley.
That's
sort his grandson of it. Pitches for the Florida Marlins.
Ah.
Taylor.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. What do you think your life would have been like if you had gone to Korea?
I have no idea. Probably I would have, had I survived, I would have probably gone back to the Imperial Valley in Southern California and tried to find a job as a it's high industry in produce, vegetables, lettuce, carrots, melons. It's great farm country. And that's probably what I would have done.
Was it pretty typical that if two friends went in, they ended up staying together from those you knew?
I don't think so. But I was an H and he was a T. We were far enough apart in the, that in our at Fort Sill, I was in C Company and he was in B Company.
But
we were right across the parade grounds from each other.
So just serendipity.
Earl wasn't married, and he spent just about every weekend with us.
How cool. Yeah. What about your friends and classmates?
I had very few of my classmates were in the Army. Some of the fellows that were a year or two older were in, but just right off the top of my head, I don't recall any of my high school graduating class served in the service.
We try to get a picture of what those middle 50s were like because the Korean conflict was so different from World War II.
Yeah,
and it's interesting to see just the different stories and the variation of the stories that people that served during that same time had such different experiences.
Most of what I always considered, every high school kid has these good friends, and we were a small enough class in a small enough town that everyone knew everyone. But of my good friends, kids that I grew up with and run around with all my life, I don't know if Earl and I were the only two that actually served in the military.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Kind of in the
I may have forgotten one or more of them, but I can't think of any of the fellas that I actually, most of them went on to college.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. So you feel like your time with the military was well spent, and you got a lot out of it, I'd say.
Absolutely. I wouldn't trade it for anything. It was like any young couple. Our two daughters were both born while Connie and I were in the service and at the Fort Sill Army Hospital. And our son Russell was born shortly after I got out of the service at Lawton, Oklahoma.
Wow.
But, yeah, we we thought we were okay at the time. You know, looking back on it, it wasn't.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
The good old days are now, you know.
Where'd you live? Did you live on base or?
No, we had an apartment. Lived in a little community of Medicine Park, about 12 miles, simply because the rent was cheaper. And Connie was a telephone operator with Pacific Bell when we got married, and there's a fellow out there had some little cabins named after the Dion quintuplets.
Oh, yeah?
And he had a switchboard. That little community had a local telephone company. And she was able to get some part-time work
as
a switchboard operator.
Yeah.
While we were in the Army and while I was in college, she was a switchboard operator for the Lawtonian Hotel at Lawton, which was a nice hotel in Lawton at the time. So she worked as much as she could with the two girls.
Yeah.
And, while we was in the Army
So did she and the kids travel with you on all those sports trips?
No.
Or was that was the 50s, wasn't it?
That was the 50s.
They took care of the kids.
No. And matter of fact, we got to to Colorado Springs to play them in 56, it would have been. And they drove the bus up to the where we were supposed to stay, and they started calling off names of who should get off the bus. And they called all the officers' names, which was only about a half a dozen enlisted men on the team. Most of them had been through college and gone through the ROTC program. And our coach was Bill Pace, who was at KU, the football coach there, and later at Vanderbilt, the head coach there. But he said, "What's going on here?" And our guide, it was a captain, said, "Well, the officers are staying here. The enlisted men, we're taking them somewhere else." He said, "No, we're not either. So we're all going to stay here." But the Army was still segregated.
Oh, I see.
By enlisted and officers, yeah. And still black, and it was still black and white.
Yeah.
We had a number of colored fellows on our football team, and they were treated just like the rest of us.
Huh, that's good. And, what happened when you went to Lawton, though? Was it still a...
It was desegregated. President Truman had desegregated the Army, but it was still all of the officers and cadre in the 598th had transferred from Fort Polk, Louisiana. They had no grunts in it.
Okay.
All the officers and cadre.
Okay.
Were black.
And so then you came in as...
We came in as a diversified unit. We had Japanese fellows, we had Chinese people, we had Mexicans, Irishmen, Englishmen, Germans, just a mix of people in the 700 of us that were sent in to fill those slots.
Wow.
And that's the way it was.
Other than that kind of status thing, was there racial tension then?
Not much. Some of the fellows later on, most of the people I went down there with were from the West Coast and farther west. But as time went by and people new soldiers come in, some from the South, and yeah, there was still some of that. Yeah, mm-hmm. There was still some.
Mm-hmm.
It was...
How was that in Oklahoma, relating with the community?
Oklahoma, I left there in 1964, and during the early 60s, there was a lot of it going on there. No, there was a place in town where the black people lived, and there was a place in town where the other people lived, and they didn't crisscross. As a matter of fact, the schools were not segregated, but very few blacks went anywhere except to the black schools.
Huh.
If they were an outstanding football player, they'd go proselyte them and bring them into Lawton High School. At the time, there was only one high school in Lawton, a town of 100,000, where Fort Sill is there. And there's now four or five schools there, but and it's totally desegregated now. But at the time, it was
that was still kind of early 64 for a lot of the racial tension really blossomed after that.
Well, they were closing them down pretty good in the South in the early 60s.
Yeah.
And but it was more of it there than I've seen since anywhere else I ever lived.
Uh-huh.
Here are the only places I've really ever lived in my adult life.
Yeah. I just find that interesting is what it would be like if all the officers were black and then they brought in a diversified group those officers to supervise.
We didn't really think anything about it. I went to high school at Hopeville, California, 8 miles from Mexicali, Old Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And we had... not many, but we had L.C. McGee and Tommy Lee and his sisters. There was four or five black kids in our class. And we played ball together. We went swimming together. We did whatever kids do together.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't care what mm-hmm. color they were. But it wasn't that way in Oklahoma in those days.
Yeah.
And I must say it's still not totally that way it should be.
Yeah.
There's still some animosity there.
That's interesting. Yeah. So what's the biggest lesson you took with you from the military?
Oh, I think how to get along with people. Mm-hmm. You got to bite your lip sometimes when you're dealing with people that are not educated. Mm-hmm. And not that I have a lot of, I only have 2 years of college is all I have, but a little common sense. Mm-hmm. I learned that a lot of times you have to do some things that you'd rather not do and just bite your lip and go ahead and do them and going about your business. But mm-hmm. I think getting along with people, different mm-hmm. kinds of people, was, I had reasonable success. I made rank mm-hmm. in 3.5 years. I went from a private nothing to a staff sergeant mm-hmm. and was able to get some education, military education that I think has helped me down the line. I learned how to study.
Oh, yeah.
I went through the 6-week leadership school, and the first thing they told us is this is not OCS, but we try hard.
Oh.
And it was the first 4 weeks was you do this and you do that, and you run a very rigid schedule and a physical schedule and some of it was hard work.
Wow.
But the last 4 weeks of it was in the classroom. And you got tested at the end of every week on everything you did. And I studied hard and did well in my...
Yeah.
And I learned how to study, I think, was the main thing.
Yeah.
That you can't learn anything if you don't...
Yeah.
So, pay attention.
The two schools you went to then was one of them that school?
One of them was I went to a fire direction computer school.
Okay.
Which we were forward observers.
Uh-huh.
And the forward observers would call descriptions into us, longitudes, latitude. We were shooting 155 millimeter guns. Travel 35, 40 miles if you mm-hmm. need them to be, depending on the powder load and that kind of thing. They would send their location to us, the target they wanted us to hit, and we would mathematically compute the altitude, the range, the deflection.
Okay.
And within 3 or 4 rounds, we could hit a target 30 miles away.
Wow.
Even with the technology they had then.
Wow. Were there computers?
Slide rules.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
19, wow.
Yeah. Use slide rules.
I must have been in on the tail end of that one.
At Fort Sill has always hosted the junior class from West Point for a 2-week session every summer. They used to do this. And at 2 years, I was able to be a part of the fire direction team that put on the demonstrations for the cadets. And of course we fudged a little. We'd been on that range a lot of times and we'd shot at those same targets, and the leech, it was fun watching those cadets sitting in these 300 or 400 of them sitting in the bleachers with their field glasses and looking at something 2 or 3 miles away.
Uh-huh.
And they'd call us over the loudspeaker, they'd call us the fire mission. And we'd hit it with the first round.
Whoa.
And we'd hit it before.
A little practice.
And they were pretty impressed. But that was fun. And we got to mingle with those kids. And they'd come and ask us questions. And we'd had to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of fun mm-hmm. In the Army. Doing some things that I'd never have done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for sure I would have never wound up in Fort Sill at Lawton, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Being from California.
That's,
I thought,
for sure.
All you're going to find in Oklahoma was a hitching post or a horse or an outdoor toilet or something.
Yeah.
A bunch of Okies, you know, and I am one.
Yeah. Yeah, did I see that?
Yeah, Mayfield, Oklahoma.
But then how'd your family get to California?
my dad had a farm at Mayfield. In the early 30s. He and Mom, I had four older brothers, two older sisters, moved there, and he had a section of ground and was farming. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Depression hit.
Dust Bowl, yeah.
And he run out of something to sell. He couldn't raise a crop. He told mm-hmm. me the only time my mother ever came back, I got him in 58, and my dad told me, went to the home place where I was born mm-hmm. to visit the cemeteries and see family mm-hmm. there. And my dad told me that when he left there in August of 1935, you couldn't raise enough feed on that section of land to feed one milk cow.
Wow.
And he hadn't paid any taxes for a couple of years, and he sold his section of land to a neighbor, a Mr. Martin, and loaded. My oldest brother was buried, and I had a niece 14 months younger than I am.
Wow.
And went to California, and I was a pretty good-sized kid, and my mother had family out there up around Riverside and San Jacinto, Hemet, beautiful country up uh-huh. in there.
Yeah.
And we stopped at 45 miles west of Yuma, Arizona in the Imperial Valley. And I didn't think anything about it until I was a big old kid. I remember in high school, and I said, Dad, all of Mom's family, Grandma and Grandpa and aunts and uncles were all up in that nice, cool country up there. What in the hell are we doing in Hopeville? Why did we stay here? He said, well, we got here. I had $1.65 left. And he said, I had to find a job. And my dad started to work 3 days later for Saudi Farms and worked 93 days in a row driving a Caterpillar for 50 cents a day.
Wow.
So that's how we got to the Jodes and the Grapes of Wrath.
Yep, that's right.
Camped along the side of the road
and
got to California that way. And I tell everybody that I went to California when I was a year old and took my family with me.
Oh. We have branch of family out there, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Where do they live?
They're up in Santa Cruz.
Oh, well, that's up in the high rent district.
Well, it is now, but yeah. It wasn't then. They bought road construction. They worked on Route 66, building mm-hmm. it out there.
Yeah.
And when they got out there, they had some road equipment. And so they started building roads up into the hills
mm-hmm.
and ended up staying there.
Two of my brothers served in the CCCs.
Oh, yeah.
And before World War II started.
Yeah.
And they built in those Cleveland National Park between the Imperial Valley and San Diego,
mm-hmm.
those mountains in through there, they built a lot of roads, fire shelter belts and
yeah.
fire breaks and things like that.
Stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's something. So, how'd your kids feel about that time period? What do you think they know about that time period?
Oh, they know things. They know everything that we know because we told them. And
yeah.
Our kids were. I think they've had it. I think they're proud of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all. This is always, Cimarron's always going to be home to all my kids.
Yeah.
We moved here, Robin was in the third grade, Stevie was in the second, and Russell started kindergarten here.
Uh-huh.
So it don't matter where we go anymore,
yeah.
this will always be home to our kids.
Yeah.
And, they get a kick out of sit still listening to the, talking about the, they still can remember things that when they were kids in Lawton and we've taken them back down there several times over the years and go through where we used to live here and we used to live there. And,
oh, yeah.
And both the girls remember vividly the Christmas they got their first bicycles.
Oh, really?
And riding down the hill
neat.
And all of that.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
They're cool with it.
Yeah, that's neat.
I think they're proud of their family ties.
Yeah, that's neat. Tell me what, if you remember anything, like what was the political climate about Korea in the 50s? Because you were there, what, do you remember the reaction after the...
I think most of the fellows that I was around, we never did understand why they didn't call it a war. Mm-hmm. It was a police action, and this kind of the saying was, it's a long, hard beat in a tough neighborhood, you know, to be able to shoot back.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that bothered most of us, that if, as I said, I was fortunate not to have to be there, but the fellows that served in combat, there was times they could see somebody shooting at them, and they weren't able to shoot at them because they were across the 38th parallel or something.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't think it was fair.
Yeah.
And if you're in war, you're going to have to kill people.
Yeah.
Or you're going to get killed.
Yeah.
And they didn't quite understand that.
Yeah. So people that came back, were they bitter about that?
Or? Some of them were, yes.
Yeah.
The conditions were terrible, and especially the winter conditions over there were terrible.
Huh.
Yeah. And I had no personal experience with that, but just from talking to
people
that were there, it was pretty primitive.
Did people process in and out of Fort Sill then during that time that had been there?
Oh, yes. I served with as a matter of fact, all of those cadre from the 598, the officers in cadre had been in Korean veterans, combat veterans.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. They were all sergeants and lieutenants. And
uh-huh.
The highest ranking officer that was there was a captain at the time. But we had a lot of sergeants, first sergeants, bucks, staffs, and they were all combat infantry badges.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they were eyeball to eyeball with them.
Yeah. So. And so they would just stay in to finish out their terms then?
Most of them were career.
Did we withdraw all those troops then at that time? Is that what happened after the armistice?
Pretty much, yeah. They left. Sure. I think we still probably have 50,000-60,000 troops in Korea.
Yeah.
Even now. But at the time, most of them came home.
Yeah. Interesting.
But most of those, people that I was first acquainted with in 54 that had been to Korea, most of those sergeants were career military.
Yeah.
They were going to serve out their time in the military.
Yeah.
And sure understand why.
Yeah.
It's hard for them to find jobs if they're going to stay in the South.
Yeah.
Even in the 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
Black people didn't have much of a chance to get a top job.
Yeah, that's right.
They'd hardly get in schools.
Yeah.
Hardly let them in.
At that time, for sure.
Matter of fact, in 57, we were playing football. We went to Tyler, Texas to play Tyler. And we had three black fellows on our team, all of them starters. And they couldn't stay in the hotel with us. 1957.
Wow.
Coach had to put them up in a private residence. We played Arlington, Texas, Arlington State, at Arlington in 57, and they couldn't stay in the hotel with us there either. They couldn't eat in the dining room with us.
Wow.
So that's been...
Times changed, didn't
it? Yeah. That's been just a little over 50 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, those young men didn't hold that against anybody. They just said, that's the way it is, and we wanted this working their way out of it. They were in college.
Yeah.
And they was going to do whatever it took to get done.
Yeah.
And the three fellows that I specifically remember was Billy Brown, Tommy Lee Johnson, and Simon Perkins. And they all got a degree. Tommy Lee got his at... Weatherford, Oklahoma. Billy Brown went to New Mexico University on a full scholarship when he got out of school there, and Simon Perkins was for Virginia.
Wow. So they did it.
They did it.
Yeah. Wow. That's something. Did you use the training that you got in there, other than you mentioned the leadership and the studying
Pretty
stuff?
Pretty much, yeah. You had to... Part of that training was how to... get up in front of people and speak.
Yeah.
And I've been in the crop insurance business for about all the time I've been in Cimarron, and I've attended instructed in its agents' seminars in schools and on some national committees and things like that. But, yeah, it was very helpful from a public speaking techniques and things like that, sure.
Yeah, good. Any other things I haven't asked you?
No, I don't know anything.
Can't think of a thing. I tried to ask you everything.
I'll just tell you what I know about whatever you want to know.
Well, good. So you're in Cimarron now. That's for good.
As far as I know, yeah. I don't know why we'd want to go anywhere else.
Yeah, that's neat.
We love it here.
That's good. Okay, any questions you can think of? Well, thank you, Sparky.
You're quite welcome.
We really appreciate it.
Okay.
Yep. Watch for your name in lights.